honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Derry still have it, and it's cleared as Pat Shields has it. They have to hold possession now, Kevin. The final whistle blows. You can look at your television sets again because the people of Kevin can rejoice. The long wait is over. The famine has been ended.
So there you go, Conan. The famine has been ended. Kevin's first Ulster title in 28 years. Marty on the commentary. We might get to a little bit about Marty later on. An inexperienced Marty Morrissey, I suppose. The Tocaldare were playing at one stage. But it was some unbelievable, it was some unbelievable scenes. Mickey Graham said after the match, I turned around and I think I was hit by a herd of buffalo. I've never seen a pitch fill up as quick. And then you have the Martin McHugh interview out on the pitch where he's been accosted and he looks like he's in pain, whatever they're doing to him behind him. And he's been lifted up and the interview only lasts about 40 seconds. But there was huge... Cavan fans haven't had a lot to shout about. But by God, they seem like a fairly wild, passionate sort of crowd.
Yeah, I thought the shots of them in the crowd as well, just in the last few minutes of the game as well, were very, it just really showed how much they were feeling it, like, you know, every one of them were biting their nails. And you're right about Martin McHugh. Like, I'm actually surprised he didn't even just, you know, turn around at one stage and say, come on, like, get off me. Or, like, he looked in real pain because they were, like, pulling his hair and pulling his jersey and somebody was
like wild animals.
Yeah, and like somebody just planted a hat on top of his head at the very end of it, and like it didn't look fun for him. I'm sure he looks back now with nice memories, but there and then he looked excruciated.
Yeah, I was reading a nice little piece by Paul Fitzpatrick in the Anglo-Celt, and he said that 102-year-old Bernie Cusack from Gary Moore, he was listening to the match on the radio because obviously he was too old to go to it, and he said during the game he kept asking his family how long was left because he knew he didn't have very long to live himself. And when the game was over, his last words were thanks be to God. And he died at 5 a.m. the following morning. His family said he died a very happy man. What a little story that is.
That's unbelievable. See, that's not a very old stories, but I actually got goosebumps there when you said that.
You are a big softy for stuff like that.
Ah, oh, that's amazing. Just trying to, like, thank you. Remember the story that Kieran Dunne, he told of, like, you know, a Kerry man listening to his radio, but an elderly Kerry man listening to the semi-final against Dublin back in Tralee. Like, that's the sort of stuff there. Your man probably lived for Cavan football, like, and what a way to end these days.
Yeah, fantastic. So the funny thing about this game is Derry were absolute raging hot favourites. They had hammered Tyrone in the semi-final and they were 2 in a row Ulster champions. Brian Mullins was their manager. They had 9 of the 15 who won an All-Ireland in 1993, only 4 years previous. And added to that, they had 4 players off the under-21 All-Ireland winning team. They beat Meath earlier that year because I had paid particular interest in that. They beat Meath well in the final because Meath had beaten us by a late penalty in the Leinster Championship that year. So like Johnny McBride, Sean Marty Lockhart, Joe Cassidy, they had those. So you would have thought on paper Derry were primed to give the All-Ireland a rattle that year between the 9 experienced players and the few young lads then fresh out of an under-21.
Yeah, and I genuinely think they should have. I think they probably look back at that game as one that really got away. In fairness to Cavan, like we'll talk about it in part 2, but like, you know, all the big players stood up and I think they dominated Derry's big players, you know, and that was a big part of it. But Derry definitely didn't play well. There was a couple of moments as well that we'll talk about that went against them. And I just think they got a few things wrong as well, management-wise. Like they had a strong enough team there. They go and compete, like, as they showed the next year when they sort of wiped the floor in Ulster and won the championship and lost out to that Galway team, you know. So they really probably look at that one as thinking, God's sake, like we let an Ulster title slip and potentially a rattle in Ireland.
Well, that was the thing. So, like, I mean, Cavan, on the other hand, were lucky in the quarterfinal against Fermanagh. Anthony Ford got a late point to get them a draw in that, and they won the replay, then beat Donegal in the semi-final to get into the final. But they were rank outsiders, and like I said, Derry were All-Ireland favourites after hammering Tyrone. But Cavan were on the rise. Their under-21s had won an Ulster in 96, and they lost the final after replay in 95. They were beaten by Kerry in the All-Ireland final in 1996. So lads like Peter Riley, Terry Farrelly, Mickey Graham, who was dropped, interestingly, for the final, Dermot McCabe, Anthony Ford, Larry Riley, like all these, Jason Riley, all these young lads were coming through. So, like, I mean, we've heard about the Cavan, you know, players coming through right now. Back in the 90s, that very same situation was happening, or at least they got an Ulster out of it.
Yeah, we're just waiting for them to do something spectacular with all these players. Like, no, like, and I think when you look back, you know, obviously as a Derry man, there's a few bones of contention that you have with the game, but genuinely, like, when I see, like, Anthony Toole being bettered for 50 minutes by Dermot McCabe, and when I see Henry Downey having to be moved off Carolyn from the centre, and when you see Kieran McKeever struggling and full back, like, you know that a team are well worth their win, as much as Derry might feel hard done by as well.
Well, I'll pull you up on Kieran McKeever now in performance of the weekend. He was the only Derry player I could pull out for performance of the weekend. Well, listen, we'll argue about that in part three. What about the celebration for Jason Riley's goal? Like, a beautiful finish. That was a Ravenelli celebration from back in the late 90s. On the Sunday game that night, Pat Spillane said, Ravenelli gets 42,000 a week for doing that. This man should get just as much.
Well, I was too busy just trying to figure out what had happened with Damien O'Reilly and Johnny McBride, because they both got pulled up then straight afterwards. I was thinking maybe O'Reilly, who set up the goal, probably had a bit on McBride afterwards, and like McBride got a yellow card, I think. So I was too busy focusing on that, looking for someone to be hard done by.
I felt sorry for David O'Neill, who took an awful boot to the face in the first minute. He got burst open, his whole jersey destroyed in blood. And then Jason Riley comes on to him with about 80 minutes to go. Like, I mean, the poor chap.
Do you know David O'Neill? I was actually thinking about it, watching him there. Like, he, honestly, game for game, he would have been one of Derry's best players that I can remember playing. He just didn't play that often. He was ravaged with injury, but every time he played, like, he seemed to do well. And like, he wrapped Cahill up. I know he struggled a bit more with Jason Riley when he came on, but I think he was probably one of the more standout ones from Derry's point of view.
Yeah, no, he definitely was. He played well. He was solid. He fouled Jason Riley a little bit, but he only got the one goal off him. So Marty did the commentary. This was a great game. We'll talk about this in part two, an enjoyable game. Marty didn't do it justice on the commentary at all. But again, it was his, he was probably inexperienced. He had been a sideline reporter, I'd say, pretty much up until that. So Kieran Mullooly, who's a news correspondent for the Midlands, he was on the sideline duty. Mullooly thought Tyrone were playing at one stage. Marty thought Kildare were playing at another stage. He says, at one stage he called, like, Joe, he says, the sides are level thanks to Big Joe. Like, whoever has called Joe Brawley Big Joe? Big Joe. He got players' names wrong. It was absolute disaster altogether.
Yeah, he called Joe Cassidy the most dangerous forward in Ireland at one stage as well. Like, you know, and Joe Cassidy's a good player, but like, I wasn't sure if he was thought of as that highly at that time as an under 21. He thought Joe Brawley had kicked the shot as well when it was Dermot Dugan. Like, you know, it was right foot. It was Dermot Dugan, who is about 4 stone on Joe Brawley. And then he actually said in the second half, so Carolyn had kicked this monster score, and he said, any criticism leveled at Ronan Carolyn?
That was false criticism.
What the hell was that about? Like, and I was like, that is now his 6th point. It's like, yes, it is his 6th point. Are you watching Henry Downey's moved off him?
Literally only person that criticised Ronan Carolan that first half was Marty Morrissey. And then he said, despite the criticism in the first half, he had a great first half. He was destroying Downey the whole way through the game. Like, I mean, it was fantastic. But he did say, the reason he thought Kildare were playing, Mullooly thought Tyrone were playing. They were in the minor. They won the minor in 97. Leash beat them in the All-Ireland final. The reason he thought Kildare were playing was because there was obviously score updates coming in, because in Croke Park, Kildare and Meath were playing out a thrilling draw. Now, it could have been the first, they played 3 games that year. The first two were draws. Well, the first replay was a draw after extra time, and then Meath beat Kildare in the third match. So at the first replay, the score was 317 to 220. So maybe he was getting distracted by the Leinster football and he wasn't really paying too much attention. It was interestingly enough, Meade came off those 3 games against Kildare then. and they ended up getting beaten by Offaly in the final. They got really shell-shocked by them. They had a whole load of injuries. So that was just an interesting thing, I thought, while he was kind of talking about this match. We're watching this match as nostalgia, and then a bit of other nostalgia kind of, you know,
Yeah. Going
into the mix of what's going on in Croke Park at that same time.
Yeah, and even so early in his career, I think he didn't mind inserting a bit of an opinion in the commentary as well, which sometimes is just off-putting when it's the main guy doing it and not the co-commentator. Like, you know, just be like, I think David O'Neill and Jason Riley were having a bit of a shoulder at each other when Riley came on. He's like, and there's no need for that. And you're like, oh, just shut up, Murray. Like, just let them get on with it. Commentate on the match.
Yeah. The big talking point of this game is that the game should have been a draw. Now, there was nothing made after this, but Raymond Cunningham's point was not even the relation of a point. Like, I mean, I had a fella on Twitter tried to tell me yesterday that he was behind it and it came in at the end or something like this. It did not. It didn't curl. It was one of those ones where he started it off exactly where he wanted to start it off with, but he didn't clip the outside of the ball to bring it back in, and it just stayed going straight. It just was not a point at all.
No, the camera was behind it as well. You know, it didn't matter if spectators behind it. Yeah, it's that was a really bad call. Like, and it is disappointing, like, you know, that the referee, who's Pat McEnany, with two umpires down there, you have linesman at that side, you have a fourth official at that side as well, and like, nobody thought, like, you know, you could hear the screams of the Derry players after the point was given, like, you know, and I think Kevin lads were surprised as well. And like, I don't know if you're going to talk about it, but I think there was a sure free on Seamus Downey at the very end as well, which would have been clipped over for a draw and injury.
I'm going to talk about that in part two. Like, I mean, that was a big call. But Carolan made a brilliant block on Toholl and he fell in front of Seamus Downey. I don't think he meant to trip him, but he did trip him. So listen, we'll get to that at the end. But that was a very brave call by Pat McEnany. But Raymond Cunningham he's been interviewed since, and he's admitted, you know, that it wasn't a point. Was there a big controversy in Derry about that? I don't remember a big thing going on about it, because I know Laois offered Carlo a replay in 1995 in the championship for a point that was given that was a wide.
Right, no, there was nothing like that. There was a lot of talk about it. Everyone knew it was a wide. Everyone felt a bit disgruntled by it, but I think because it was in the first half as well, like, just maybe it wasn't as it wasn't that sort of vociferous in all the criticism for it. Social media obviously plays a big part, and then I think the fact that Derry just didn't play well too, like, you know, maybe in some level they thought that they might not have deserved.
They deserved it, yeah, because they were hot favourites obviously going into it, so it would have looked very bad if Derry were crying for a replay.
Yeah, no,
that's true. Right, come here, we'll leave it there, Colin, because the Cavan captain that day, Stephen King, joins us on the line. Stephen, we're talking about the Phantom Raymond Cunningham point. You'd be a brave man if you're going to try and convince me that was a point.
Yeah, well, that's true, and believe it or not, at the time there wasn't that much talk about it. Now, I've seen it a number of times now on the phone and on Twitter and stuff like that, and it looks like it was a wee bit on the offside, let's just put it. But at that time, it really wasn't discussed that much after the victory, to be honest with you. I believe it was talked on the game. Obviously, we talked an awful lot more in Derry, but it really wasn't, and it wasn't the fact that there was anything hidden about it. You know, it really never really came up in any conversation. The euphoria was more to the fore and the celebrations rather than talking of the had-beens.
Yeah, well, I suppose the big thing, it was only after about 10 minutes. So, like, if it was the winning point, there would have been a lot more made out of it. Derry had 60 more minutes to play, you know.
But that's a fair point, Colin. Yeah, obviously, if it had been here at the end of the game and a point swinging it here and there, everybody would be talking about it more so. Yeah, it would definitely be highlighted to a bigger extent. There still was nearly a full game to go for anyone to win or lose the game.
Yeah, and the funny thing, Raymond Cunningham wasn't even from Cavan.
No, he lives on the border up there. He'd be with the soccer as well as in Cavan, but I think he worked in Kingspan, if memory serves me right.
Yeah, he did. He's from Meath, obviously.
That's right. Yeah. That would be great. There'd be a great relationship with Meath and Cavan on the football field. It really wouldn't matter, would it?
You didn't hold it. But I think he played handball a lot with Cavan underage or something. So there was a bit of a connection there anyways. And then he got the call off Martin McHugh.
Yeah, there was. And actually, when you say that, Colin, handball is huge in Kingscote. Like, they've great allies there, and these all Ireland's played in Kingscote. So a lot of guys that like, played, like Joe Dillon which is long before that, Joe Dillon and the Falcons, all those guys, Barry McGarrett, they all played actually handball, and Raymond would have been to the forefront playing handball in Kingsford, yeah.
Mickey Graham described the pitch invasion at the full-time whistle. He said, I turned around and I think I was hit by a herd of buffalo.
you could even say elephants. I never ever seen anything like it in all my life. It was just a pure stampede, and I seen one of my friends was on Twitter saying they can never remember our club man Junior McKiernan helping. We were from Killeshandon, they call us Killeshandon Lagers. Never seen Junior stand there just helping Lagers across the wire on the hill end. So everyone was just plowing into the field. You know, it's the biggest takeover of a Clonus pitch in many, many, many years, and I wouldn't say that's happened since.
Yeah, and even Martin McHugh was interviewed out on the pitch, and he was being like assaulted, it looked like, and then he was being kissed, and then he was being lifted up, and he looked like he was in pain at one stage, and the interview had to be cut short.
Well, we actually got a laugh at that the other day. I hadn't seen the full thing off, and I actually hadn't seen it. I'd seen the RT version of the game. You know, the Sunday game, but I hadn't seen the UTV one with Adrian Logan, and went through the whole thing, and it actually showed that clip of Martin. Oh my God, really? I tell you, he was being nipped and pulled and tugged, and he was cringing his face as someone had a hurt of his nipple or something, you know, kind of a nip and take gesture was going on. But it was incredible scenes, and I think Barney Cully, our PRO, was doing his best to save him.
He was. There was somebody trying to help him out. Greer, what's your memories of the actual match? Like, I mean, you were in under pressure with a hamstring injury, like you were down getting treatment. You had that injury in the lead up to the game.
Yeah, I had the injury in the lead up to the game. And the doctor at that time was Paddy Rudden. And I hadn't really heard much about the acupuncture and stuff like that at the time, Colin. But he treated me with acupuncture and he got me moving again. And, you know, I was very, very happy and comfortable going into the game. And, you know, really, them years, you never really had much hamstrings or groins or anything like that at the time. But I felt when you got over the 30-year mark, 32, they started to annoy me a little bit. But no, I was in great form, you know, for the Fermanagh match and the Donegal match. But I took a bit of a twinge down the training and, you know, I was fine. But after about 15 minutes, I don't know, I was racing for a ball with Toll or something. And actually, I found the twinge all right. And, you know, I say the rest is history. But we were always confident we had the panel as well, you know, that we were fairly well covered in all sectors, not like, you know, pre-Martin McHugh's time, you know, there was gaps, but we felt we were confident. And you know, the under-21s and all that had, you know, that strengthened the panel to a lot. But my memory of it is just fantastic memories. And I ran right through the semi-final, and probably the greatest memories of all is the joy that the Cavan supporters got to have that at that time. But Cavan, they're frantic, and they're probably the top supporters, because, you know, I'm well able to prepare to say that. But even in my early days, I was chatting the other night, we went to play a league match, and this is in the early 80s down in Banch in Tipperary, and you know, football wasn't really to the forefront like it is now in Tipperary. I'm not saying you're taken from it, but there must have been at least 5,000 Cavan people down for an ordinary league match down in Bantry. So, right. You know, the support was always there. And even now I would say, and I'd say you would say the same, Colin, I mean, your playing days with Laois, that the amount of support for the ordinary league matches would surpass the support that's travelling now. Would say for those type of league matches, obviously the Donegals and the Dublins have, and the Thrones have still got the big numbers. But the ordinary 5-8s, we had serious numbers.
Well, that's it. Like, I mean, I even remember in Mickle's time, there'd be huge crowds for National League games. I remember against Kildare one year, there could have been 10,000 at a National League game. I think a lot of the counties outside the big ones, the supporters have lost faith a bit because there's not too much to play for.
Well, that's true. And I suppose going back to that time as well, which I thought, and they maybe should have a rethink, because the schedules are really jammed in with cigarettes and everything. We played a couple of games in the National League pre-Christmas. You know, you maybe got 2/3 ahead, and then you went back ahead in the following, you know, February or whatever, and you played the remainder of it. you know, if they could, you know, have a look ahead. But there's so much football going on now with the colleges and, you know, underage and under-21s and minors and all that. I think it was a good system at that time, and you probably nailed it, you know, that more to go to. And derby matches, like what you were saying with Leash and their neighbours and Cavan and their neighbours. I think in a playoff with Tyrone, I think it was over 10,000 in a Division 2 or 3 playoff in my time. We're in relegation, but then we beat Tyrone in Dungannon, where they'd never been beaten before, and they probably brought us there on you know, probably they, you know, they keep the winning record in Dungannon, but we beat them anyway. And the relegation playoff then was in Clonus, and some were saying it was over 12,000 plus at a Northern relegation match.
Right. Well, you were on the rise back in 97 anyways, Stephen, because, like, I mean, you were in the Ulster final in 95, then obviously the under-21s got to an All-Ireland final in 96, and you got a fair old whack out of those teams, like Peter Riley, Mickey Graham, Dermot McCabe, Anthony Ford, Larry Riley, who was a complete live wire. Like, I mean, there was a real feeling, even though you were underdogs against Derry in the final, that you had a chance of winning this one.
Ah, yeah, you know, certainly, and I alluded to that earlier, Colm, yeah. You know, the under-21s, that panel of the people you mentioned there, Larry and Peter and Jason, all those guys, you know, they enhanced the senior panel, without doubt. And I suppose, to be fair, you know, Ronan Carlin and Damien and probably myself and Bernard Morris and Fintan Cahill, we were kind of experienced players. And they definitely added to the pot. And yes, there was always going to be something happening. We were actually going quite well as well for those number of years that the under-21s was doing well. So yeah, there was something there. No one had to really give you a chance. And it's only recently I was reading that, you know, the betting even was 4-7 on Derry and 5-2. Cavan, the pundits, you know, I think it was Eamon Coleman, God rest him, you know, obviously was siding with Derry even, and him living in Cavan, but he couldn't see a Cavan victory. Tommy Carr, I reckon Derry, no problem. Colm O'Rourke, the same. And I wouldn't blame it. I think Larry Tompkins was the only pundit, you know, I think he was saying he would not be surprised for a Cavan victory. But right. We ourselves, and I'm sure in your playing days, the same, and I would say the same even when I was playing club football. Sometimes the hardest thing is actually to get to the final. And people say it's all in the day, and it is a cliche that it's all in the day. But if you get to a final, it's amazing what can and does happen. So we were very, very, you know, comfortable going into the final. We knew we had every chance. We obviously had homework done on various players like Tohol and Brawley, and I'm sure they had homework done on a few of our individuals as well. So we still felt that we had a really, really 50-50 chance, but a good chance. And I said earlier, Our panel was stronger than it had been in years, and that was to you know, enhanced by the joining up of the under-21s and the way they had come through. And they had won an Ulster title at under-21 level. They had got to an All-Ireland final. So, you know, these boys knew what it was like to be winning as well. So I think, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Those bunch definitely helped what was already there.
Another, I was reading Ronan Carolan was recalled in 97. Where had he gone?
Well, so was I, Colm. that one had bypassed me. He must have been either injured or dropped for the Fermanagh match. And I was just, as we were chatting about it, as I said, the local Anglo-Celt had dug this out of the archives. And in fairness to Paul Fitzpatrick, he made a wonderful job of writing up on the game. But I've seen that as well, where he was recalled. But if and what he was recalled, Ronan's a fantastic player, his freeze alone and that kind of stuff. It'll be a savage game. He scored, I think, 1-7 in the semi-final against Donegal.
Yeah.
But he was married to a lovely Donegal woman, Deirdre. So I'd say McHugh was saying here, if he ever gets a bit of an edge here, this will be the one.
Martin McHugh made a huge impact on you. Like, I mean, he was a very tactical manager for 1997, you know, when, like, he put Damien O'Reilly up into the forwards and he dropped out into midfield and obviously changed your style of play to a more Donegal style.
He did, yeah. I tell you, to be fair to me, he was taking it match by match, you know, and I suppose the scary thing about the whole thing was that really Fermanagh could have dumped us in the first round. And as you know, in your playing times as well, there was no back door that time. You were gone. And that was always the good thing about a championship too. I'm not saying the fact that you were gone, but it put that extra bit of bite to it. I think it was Anthony Ford got the equalising point, and we got a second chance at it. And we were deserving winners in the replay. But I'd say Fermanagh, to be fair, were probably kicking themselves. They had a huge opportunity of dumping us out of it. And we would have been favourites by a good margin going into that Fermanagh match. And then up came Donegal, big game. Like, there's a huge tradition and lovability, for want of a better word, with supporters in Cavan and Donegal. They always seemed to get on well, but it was still a match you wanted to win. We knew to be in their thousands from both counties, and the fact that Wee Martin was from Donegal, and something like Ronan Murray together from Donegal and all that stuff, you know, it would all come into it. But I'd say there was a certain amount of pressure on Martin, even though he never said it or showed it, to get this victory. And maybe he was hurting a little bit too, because I think pre that he had went for the Donegal management job.
Yeah.
And he didn't get it and looked him over. So, yeah, he had a bit to prove as well. And so he did, you know. And tactically, as you said there earlier, yeah, he did probably pull a rabbit or two out of the hat.
Yeah, and like, are you surprised he never managed at inter-county level after Yee?
I probably was surprised at Bate Callum, that he didn't continue for a little while, or, you know, take a year out and maybe take someone else on then. But to be honest with you, it is an unbelievable job to take on. County manager. I don't know how people get the time for it. You probably see now, you know, an awful lot of the players' careers have changed, you know, where the, you know, when, I'm not saying went for the easy job, but they went for teachers. And I remember reading about Sean Kavanagh, and he probably nailed it, that people that wanted to play football really changed their careers, that they would have more time off, maybe finish at 3 or 4 in the day, or maybe be self-employed or something like that. So that dictates a lot of people changing their career somewhat. I know there is an awful amount of teachers out there at the moment that hadn't planned to be a teacher, but they did went that route, you know, to be able to, you know, to perform and give what it takes now to be a county footballer. And just back to your question, I think Martin, he gave so much over them couple of years to Cavan. I think he just said to himself he wouldn't be able to do it and work. You know, he wasn't a teacher or anything like that, and to work away. So, yeah, and I think it's overcooked at the minute. I know I'm moving on to my, I think it's, there's far too much training done at the minute, particularly collective training, I should say.
Yeah, they're probably. One thing I was reading that McHugh did was he cut out the full Irish breakfast before matches, which didn't go down too well with some of the lads on the squad.
Well, the diets have changed a wee bit, I have to say, Colin. You know, we heard of this thing called spaghetti with the Lord Jesus. I don't know where it came out of, someone said. We had changed, and the diet came into it a wee bit, and Jesus, we'll come back to 97. Yeah, the breakfast probably was, you know, it was brown bread and a bit of porridge and maybe a banana, or, you know, if you were having something, a home game, it'd be meeting later. And it would be something like in the just a small bit of spaghetti bolognese line or something like that, you know. But in fairness, I go back even long before that, when we were playing Railway Cup at Ulster, Brian McAniff always and never had this thing about a sherry trifle with the last thing, you know. You'd have something to eat and a sherry trifle, because he felt the sugar in the sherry trifle would give you energy. And like, he was very successful at Railway Cup level as well, let me add. So, I don't know. I bought into it, certainly. I bought into it. I had no issue with it at all. I hadn't really been a spaghetti man or a fan of it or anything. But, yeah, and to this day, I'm still eating it.
Then we, up to 2003, 2004, we were still eating fries with the team up in the Red Cow Hotel before Leinster finals or any big match. It was mad stuff altogether.
Yeah, it's kind of mad stuff, certainly. But, you know, I honestly don't think, obviously the quantity and the size, but, you know, if you're eating something that at 12 o'clock in the day and your game was at 3:30 in the afternoon, I don't think, well, within reason, like I should say, I don't think it was a major factor,
no,
to be honest with you.
No, it wouldn't, no. And the Three O'Shea brothers always ate a fry, so they didn't do too bad, did they?
Oh, weren't they fantastic? Oh, Jesus, you'd have to admire them. But, oh, my God. Yeah. No, they didn't do too bad, is right. That's putting it mildly.
Kabir, you said in your speech the Anglo-Celt Cup is coming home. Did you do much work on your speech, or would you have been too, didn't want to tempt fate?
I would write nothing out. I would have done a little bit, obviously, if the opportunity did come up. The fact that the Anglo-Celt is based in Cavan, it wasn't a real, you know, brain record to think of something like that, you know, coming home to Cavan where the Anglo-Celt is. Yeah, and at that time, I did remember saying, you know, and it only hit me that day, you know, when the final whistle went in, believe it or not, was, you know, peace in the country had been, you know, would be remembered for winning the Ulster title the same day peace was announced in the north and all that, you know, our country was announced. Those little things just came to me. But you're always conscious of leaving somebody out, you know what I mean? Leaving someone at the backroom team out, you know, even you'd be trying to think of that walking up the steps, because I genuinely had nothing wrote out and I didn't want to tempt fate or anything like that. Yeah, but, you know, Anglo-Celt coming home. I suppose the only thing I had thought about was, not really fluent in Os Gaelic or Irish, was, you know, Uachtaráin, and if the president of the Ulster Council is obviously going to be there, but if the president of the GAA was going to be there, just that I didn't miss them in
that right,
the speech. But
yeah,
just get that bit right. But after that, no, whatever happened, happened. And, you know, you got them few words out, and you obviously were very, very nervous. But the crowd took over after that, really.
Well, that's it. You're still on a bit of a hype. Because, like, I mean, you were on the go. You made your debut in 1980. This is 1997.
That's right. That's what I was saying. As we were saying earlier, remember the league used to be played in two stages?
Yeah.
Before and after Christmas. I think, from memory at that time, obviously, Celtic people, it was the 79-80 league, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We'll say 1980. Oh, good, yeah. And, you know, played a lot then, and probably a disappointment then. I remember coming up to 1983, we got to the Ulster final and playing in every game. And then I lost my place in that Ulster Championship because Gabriel Kelly, who's a gentleman, I hasten to add, he started to bring in back older seasoned players like Ad King and Ollie Brady and guys like that, and rightly so, I hasten that. But I lost my place then in 83, and I was only brought on as a sub in all the games then. But I'd been playing right up until that, and then when the Ulster Championship was over, you were back playing in the league, this, that, and the other. And as the years and years went on, you'd be saying, ah, that's it, never again, you know. But at that time, the Ulster Championship, a fella got a great laugh this years ago, which we actually did come Easter Monday. A number of us, or most of us, always went off to drink on Easter Monday. That was it. No drink until we were knocked out of the championship. And as you know, it was not good that time. But some smart ass says, you weren't off it too long. If you were off at Easter, you're probably playing a preliminary round in May and maybe beaten that day, so that every right probably a throw down at us, you know.
Right.
We did that, and you know, then you were knocked out. We were beaten in the first round on quite a few occasions. We're not bothered with this anymore, but you know, you had the break, you went back to your club. Next thing was the October, we'll say, the National League is starting again. That defeat in May was long gone in your head. You were ready to go out again. You had no bother going back now. But it's a consistent all year round thing now. Colin, would you agree there that, you know, they're never getting a break? Because, you know, even if they're knocked out in the first round, they're going to a qualifier and they may get an easy qualifier to get two or three games out of it.
Yeah.
Then there's a little bit of a break and, you know, they're back at college, they're back at under-21s, their clubs are at it. So it's constant, you know.
Yeah, no, it is. Like, I mean, not too many people remember how close you were against Kerry in the semi-final, because Larry Riley, he had a chance of a goal to hit the crossbar and that would have put you a point up. And then Kerry went down and they got a goal and then it was five in it. You know, like, I mean, you were right in that game right up until late. I was reading Ronan Carroll in particular was saying that was one huge regret that you didn't take advantage of what he said was a very vulnerable Kerry team.
Oh, absolutely. You said it perfectly. And I've obviously spoken to Ronan and Damien and Fintan and even Jason to a lesser extent, you know, over the years since then. And I have always said it's the one that got away. I'm not taking away from Kerry by any standards. You know, we played reasonably well in the first half. You know, they went ahead, we came back into the game at a great time. Fintan Cahill got a goal just coming up to half time. We were going into that dressing room really, really good. You know, I felt we needed to make a change or two. I thought Fitzgerald and Kinnaird was a kind of a wee bit on top, but otherwise we were really dealing with it very, very well. And as you said there earlier about Larry nearly getting there, it's a game that definitely we should have done better. It's a game that possibly we might have won, but not taken away from Kerry. They just pulled away in the last 10 minutes, and I forget even what they won by. So we take them in. But it was an opportunity that we'd never get again. And, you know, we'd have probably held our own in the final anyway, but it's about getting to the finals, as I said earlier, Colm, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. And you retired then. That was your last game, was it? You were 35 the following year, and you tore muscles.
Yeah, I went back for the initial stage of the National League. And I pulled a muscle in my stomach, just low down in my stomach, and operational and all that kind of stuff was, you know, the next man, you know, at 35, 36 next birthday. No, it wasn't, you know, it didn't look feasible for me to be doing something like that at the time, you know.
Yeah, well, look, it wasn't the worst last year that you had anyway, so there's no, you can't complain.
No, I can't complain, no, but I would always say to people, you know, we might not have many medals in Cavan in my time, but I probably would say I wouldn't change it, because the friendship that I've made and through playing with Cavan and playing county football right through underage right up, and I'm sure you and anyone that played county football and played with their club, I think you'd have to say the GAA is a tremendous organisation. The way it can get you involved, and you know, it's a really good life being a county footballer in the essence of making friends and getting out there, and you know, let's say other people play golf, we played football and we enjoyed it, and that was our leisure.
We definitely did. Stephen, thanks very much for taking the call.
Thanks yourself, Colin. Appreciate it.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning, and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a soppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GAA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Cavan won 14, Derry 16 points was the final score. And I suppose the start off was some of the changes Martin McHugh made before the game. The big one was putting Damien Riley up into the forwards and bringing him out as a third midfielder. He was usually a defender. And dropping Mickey Graham, who had been on the team. He was only off junior 21. So, like, that was a big call. And do you know what? When I was looking at that and reading about it, Conan, Mickey Graham did the exact same thing against Donegal. Was it 2 years ago in the finals? Remember, he played the defender corner forward and brought him out. It's like he did to the player, the Cavan corner forward, what was done to him, did he? Back in 1997.
Yeah, no sympathy for the corner forward now, and when he's the manager. But that was a particularly annoying one, because Derry actually had the resource to deal with that even better, like to do what Cavan were doing, because it's Johnny McBride in the defence, who was obviously, you mentioned under 21, he's a midfielder. He played a lot in midfield and half forward with Derry, and for some reason they left him in full back along with Laurie Riley, getting absolutely roasted until they eventually moved Kieran McKeever back. But you know, they could have just pushed Johnny McBride over to Damien Riley. They eventually did do that. But then I think the Cavan goal came because O'Reilly went back inside and McBride was following him back inside. And again, he's a fullback and he's at sea. And just bad marking. The ball's over the top and O'Reilly sets it up. So I think that was a big mistake for Brian Mullins. And I don't know if Martin McHugh could foresee that, but it worked very well for
them. Yeah, it was. It was a strange one seeing Johnny McBride put in on Larry Riley doing a cornerback man marking job on a live wire. corner forward like him, you know. Like, I mean, then again, that Gary Coleman probably would have been just as bad as a marker. Both Johnny McBride and Coleman, like, Sean Marty Lockhart's on the other wing back. Like, what's wrong with
it? That was like unbelievable.
Like, he didn't turn out to be a good man marking quarterback.
And he was the fullback for the under-21s. You know, it was like, he'd Kieran McKeever, who sort of followed Damien O'Reilly originally, and then he was sort of drifting around. And, you know, he could have went back in earlier, and he had Sean Marty, as you say, playing halfback. Like, you know, I'm Sean Marty's biggest fan, but, like, he's not a halfback. Like, he's a man marker, and Johnny McBride is a quality footballer. So, like, it's just, you had two people completely unused who could have been your better players if you had to use them properly.
Well, that was the thing. And obviously, Cavan's tactics was a two-man full forward line and getting ball. And again, in Martin McHugh's kind of image and Donegal's image, they played that hand passing up to midfield and then looking to give it in. Again, a very modern style of play that when you think back of 1997, you think Cavan held on to the ball an awful lot. When you look at it through the last 10 years we've watched it, you would say, geez, they played a lovely controlled brand of football. There was no lump balls whatsoever.
Oh, that's a good point. And they were all pinged in front. Like, you know, Larry Riley looked like a godsend, like, you know, because balls were just being pumped in front of him in the space. There was no sweeper, obviously, from Derry point of view, and Cavan got to a certain point and just picked a nice pass in. And I think the difference when I'm talking about Derry playing badly is that they were trying to lump it from further back down the pitch, and a couple of times from halfback they were trying to hit Joe Brawley and Joe Cassidy, and it's not nice balls for a full forward to try and receive, whereas Cavan's were all just sort of thinking about the forward and where he could receive it.
Yeah, no, that was definitely it. So Martin McHugh looked like he had his homework done. It was a surprise that Dermot McCabe was put on Toehill, considering how young he was. Like, I mean, he won the throw-in. He dispossessed a ball, I think it was Sean Marty Lockhart, with a terrible hand pass and kicked a monster of a score. It was interesting then for the Cavan kickouts, Dermot McCabe would just sprint off to the sideline, bringing Toehill with him, while the kickout would go to Stephen King. And then the Derry kickouts were all going towards Toehill, but Dermot McCabe was just trying to break everything. So you had this kind of dynamic where at all costs, we keep our kickouts away from Toehill. McCabe, bring him wherever you can, but we're not hitting him.
Yeah, and it's sort of sometimes frustrating when you have someone as dominant as Toehill who's sprinting out to the wing after someone who's obviously not getting the ball, and you'd like to have seen him just hang around in the middle and sort of risk it a few times, but he probably just didn't want his man to be winning handy ball.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. Like, I mean, the problem with it, because McCabe's no slouch in the air anyways. McCabe's excellent in the air. It would have gone to McCabe had he not tracked him. So, like, I mean, you know, I wouldn't blame Toehill in that situation because now maybe he could have tried it maybe once to see, you know, would O'Dowd have the bottle to go to him kind of maybe to the wing. I definitely think he probably shouldn't have followed him every time, but it would have gone to McCabe had Toll made a habit of not bothering to track him.
Yeah, and I think like once Derry had McBride out there, and they had obviously Dermot Heaney in the middle, so like, you know, they could have just been a bit smarter about it, like, and let McBride track those runs, or like, Stephen King, like, you know, was carrying an injury, like, you know, so he didn't need all those boys there and letting Toehill run off to the wing. Like, he needed him where he was in the last 15 minutes, basically. Like, you know, it was a bit sobering for most of the game seeing McCabe play so well. Toehill was still being Toehill, like, you know, but when someone's breaking even with Toehill, they're doing bloody well. And then, you know, Toehill came into the last 15 minutes. But before that, I think Cavan had sort of really limited him in a way that I hadn't seen much throughout his career.
Yeah. Stephen King was interesting because he was down getting the hamstring seen to after 80 minutes, and he was clearly carrying it a little bit. And he ended up, Johnny McBride ended up marking him. And unless Johnny McBride's confidence had been, you know, hit badly by the bit of a scorching he took off Larry O'Reilly, like, I mean, I can't understand how he didn't just attack at all opportunities and really, you know, put it up to Stephen King, who wasn't 100%. It seemed like he was just happy. You know, Stephen King would have carried a reputation back then, and maybe that's why he didn't want to. But he probably would have got a bit of joy with his young legs running around with a fella, you know, 35 carrying an injury.
Yeah, and the confidence is probably the big thing. Like, you know, his first year in the panel, not playing well in an Ulster final. Like, you know, he saw his score in the second half where he just cuts inside and swings it over off the left, and it was so natural, and you're sort of thinking, why haven't you been doing that the whole half? But I think probably a lot of it was in his head at that time. Like, you know, just didn't start well on Cavan's captain, you know, being moved around the pitch and just maybe not as... not as dominant as he probably could be in the match.
Yeah, Fintan Cahill, their full forward, eventually was taken off for Jason Riley, and he would have been one of their better players. Jeez, he had no left foot whatsoever because he had a chance in the first half. Did you see what he tried to do? He tried to contort his body to go off the outside of his right. Doesn't that look really bad for an intercounty player, you know, to do that? Because that was a half a goal chance. I think he should have shot in his right. With it. If you have no left, then why turn back in on your left?
Well, the interesting thing is, remember James McCarthy did it, was it this year? It might have been the start of this
McCarthy
year.
McCarthy did it, yeah.
Yeah, and it looked great because he put it over. It still looked a bit stupid, but it was like...
It looked stupid.
Nice. Yeah. It was a nice bit of skill, like, you know, control it off the right like that. But I think Cahill's was a... Like, it was more silly because he was on the right-hand side. Like, McCarthy at least was on the left-hand side with all the angle he come across the ball. But yeah, that was ridiculous. Like, he was almost in line with the post and he's trying to put it over off the outside and yeah, hit the post. Looks stupid.
I feel sorry for the Derry full forward line. Like, I mean, because I was watching Brolly fairly closely. He didn't touch the ball until 20 minutes when he got one and he hand-passed it straight to a Cavan man, or it got intercepted by a Cavan man. And he was under a lot of pressure then. He got a free and he missed it on his own side. And it wasn't until Kieran McKeever came out, and well, he was out following around anyways. He gave him two balls. He was actually looking up for him, Kieran McKeever, and gave him a couple of balls. He got a point just before half time, but Cavan's decision to put Jerry Sheridan back on him looked like a good one. Now, when Brolly got the ball, he did look dangerous. It was just Derry gave there. Yeah, Joe Cassidy got a ball, a point in the very first minute, and never felt the weight of the ball until the second half, until he should have given one into Henry Downey and made a balls of it. He did well to stay on the field, but they got no regular supply compared, you know, to the kind of more structured play Cavan had.
Yeah, and that was a frustrating thing. Like, you mentioned Joe Cassidy's point. Like, that was brilliant. He was under so much pressure. He had boys coming in from all angles. He kept his composure, put it over. Brolly, when he got, like, one of the first times he actually got turned around to attack, he just glided by Sheridan and cut inside and put it over, and then he won a free off him. And, like, you know, they didn't get the ball much, and when they had it, they showed how good they were. But, like, there was just too many instances where Derry were kicking the ball from too far back with men standing in front of them. And maybe the McKeever thing is just the club connection. Like, you know, just I'm looking up for Joe because I know what Joe can do. Everyone should have known what he can do anyway at that stage. But, yeah, I don't know. It was very frustrating. And I think a big part of it was probably the half-forward line as well. McCusker and McGill and Dugan, a lot of it as well, just pulling out too deep and just leaving too much space. And it was easy for Cavan just to sort of clog it up.
Is that Fergal McCusker that played corner back in 93?
That's Fergal McCusker, yeah, Fergal P.
So he played wing forward that day. So that was a very defensive. Was that a defensive one, or did he play? He was just an all-rounder. I don't know much about him.
Just an all-rounder, like, just a good footballer, like, but he definitely didn't have much of an impact that day against Cavan. Like, you know, just I thought him and McGill, just, you know, especially when you have Endogarmy like on the bench, you're just sort of crying out for a change, or, you know, a bit
why was he on the bench? I have that down in my notes because the camera panned straight to him. I says, that's Endogarmy, and I went on his Wikipedia. He was only 31, the same age as Henry Downey at that year. Why would he not have been able to get on that team?
I don't know. Like, it might have been carrying an injury. I'm not sure. Like, you know, Carl Diamond's an all-round quality player as well. Like, Gary Doyle from Lavie came on. He's a good footballer, but I don't know. Like, I definitely would have had Endogarmy unless he was carrying an injury. I'm not sure what was happening back then.
Yeah, the two Heaneys weren't at the races at all, were they, in the game?
No, I think Dermot Heaney's a much better player when he's playing in half forward line. I think you actually saw it towards the end of that game where he starts bulldozing through people. He's got a bit of skill. He's got real power. I'm not sure, like, you want him tracking after men all over the pitch, like, so it's just better having him as a luxury player at half forward. And, like, I think he was a bit wasted in midfield.
Oh, he was in midfield. Heaney, I mean, I actually meant the two Downey brothers, rather, Seamus and Henry Downey. They're two big players, obviously, for Derry, and neither of them played. I know Seamus made a bit of a difference when he came out to midfield, but he looked bet, actually. He looked very kind of off the pace. And, like, I mean, Henry got an awful roasting off Carolyn right throughout the game.
Yeah, like, that was disappointing from Henry. Like, I think just that says, like, Seamus, like, it wasn't just the Seamus down here from 1993, and he spent a lot of the time out around the middle. It was only, like, later in the second half where he started having a bit more of an impact. But I think that was a change that probably could have been made as well. But then Derry only made two subs off the bench, so maybe Mullins just didn't fancy what he had.
Right, okay. It was the start Cavan made to the second half that probably won the game for them. Like, I mean, they got a 3-point cushion Carolyn with a couple of beautiful scores in that. And like when they went that 3 points up, then Derry took over completely and they looked like they were a better team. Brolly started getting a little bit more ball, was getting fouled. You know, they started chipping away and they ended up going a point up.
Yeah, like it's funny, like, because Cavan at the start of that second half, yeah, they came out like a house on fire. Derry, I don't know, they weren't playing well. Like, again, we're talking about this. I don't think Derry ever had a pattern of play, or like there was no real period. Like they did chip away at them there, but they didn't seem like they were controlling the match, if you know what I mean. I think Cavan, once he got three up, sort of started shitting themselves a little bit and just let Derry clip over a few scores, and suddenly they were a point up. I was actually really surprised they were a point up. I thought there was still a point in it for Cavan at that stage, because again, it just didn't seem like
Sorry to cut you off there. Isn't that a little bit annoying on the GAA now that they don't have a clock or a timer on the like, that's, why would they not?
It's very annoying, and like the timer is actually probably that's the most annoying, because like the score obviously would help if that was on, but the timer, like I'm going down to look at the YouTube to see how much time has gone on that, but yeah. I'm trying to guess how much, like, you know, how much faff we had at the start of the game with the national anthem and stuff.
Yeah, and it actually does affect your recollection of the game a little bit. I take a lot of notes now because I'm like, Jesus, usually I think the clock and the score are able to give you kind of, you know, mental notes of when things happened in the game, you know, in a chronological order, like when it all seems to be a jumble when you don't have that in the corner. I think we're just so used to it.
Yeah, no, but like, you know, and even like the team sheets as well coming up at the start, like that would definitely help too. Yeah. Actually, was it the down game? They brought up one team. I think they brought up the Meath team and that was it. They didn't bring up the down team. You know, little things like that are just, it would just really help the experience.
Yeah, no, it definitely would. So the huge score in this game was obviously the goal. And like, I mean, until I watched this back, in my memory, which obviously was inaccurate, I thought this was like a 2 or 3 minutes to go kind of goal where Derry didn't have a chance. There was 10 minutes of normal time and 3 minutes of injury time left. You know, like, I mean, this was not game over for Derry in any way. Like, it was a brilliant finish by Jason Riley. It was a brilliant ball in by Peter Riley. A brilliant catch by Damien Riley. Like, Johnny McBride, like you said, got sucked in under the bounce and, you know, wouldn't have been all that comfortable kind of in there. But again, loads of time left for Derry, but you know, they just couldn't snap out of this kind of, you know, like you said, even though they got on top and were dominating, they weren't kicking great football.
No, they weren't. Like, and again, like you said, you didn't know who to put in for performance of the week. There was nobody where you were thinking, oh, get him the ball. Became Toll the last 10 minutes and he started, like, you know, those big long strides and getting them up the pitch. But, you know, there was just no instance where it was Toho finding Brolly or something like that. Like, you know, where the boys were going to click if Derry could get them the ball. I don't know. It was strange. Like, again, and like the clock probably didn't help with that goal as well. And then Murray for like 10 minutes and blow it up. They're asking for the game to be blown up. And it's like, well, hang on. Like, there's still loads to go here. I don't know. Derry just sort of seemed to be a bit sucker punched by that as well. And I think there was almost a resignation where we haven't been good here today. And yeah, I don't know. It was very disappointing. You text me to say sorry that we were going to watch this game. And it was actually more disappointing than I can remember at the time.
Right. Like, I mean, it was a weird game in that it didn't seem like Ulster Championship in that the marking wasn't all that tight sometimes. And, you know, it didn't seem... Now, Marty didn't help on the commentary and whatever about the sound probably didn't get enough of the crowd response. It just had didn't have like a kind of a mad championship feel about it or something.
Yeah, Marty wasn't that excitable. Like, was he? Like, you know, again, maybe he was distracted. Maybe he was just looking at the scores coming in, but he definitely didn't seem to hit the right pitch for the game that he was watching. Like, no, it was a good end-to-end match. The forwards could have been on top. There was space, but like, even that goal is an example. Like, McCusker should have put the ball dead. Like, here we are in 97 talking about stuff we talk about today, but like, you know, you have to be kicking that dead. You should have been putting it over. He dropped it straight into the keeper's hands about 10 yards out from the keeper's line, and then Cavan went straight up the pitch and a big long ball and scored a goal from it. Like, so yeah, that was disappointing. And like, yeah, again, you're right, Marty probably didn't help.
So you think Carolyn's block on Toholl and then he fell on the ground, you think that was enough to trip up Seamus Heaney, even though he didn't intentionally try to trip him, he still tripped him?
Yeah, like, I saw Pat McInerney put the whistle to his lips, like, you know, as if to say that's definitely a foul, but then I don't know, was he factoring in the fact that it was a great block and he was on the ground? You know, just because he puts a whistle to his lips doesn't mean that he's decided it's free. He's just getting ready. But to me, I thought it was enough because Seamus Downey comes in and collects the sort of loose ball. And yeah, like he gets tripped as he's trying to get away. Otherwise, I think he's going to go and swing it over. You know, he's got the space and he's just sort of clipped down. Like, I don't think it's deliberate or anything, but I think maybe I'm being biased, but I think he murdered a free there.
I don't know why I keep calling Seamus Downey Seamus Heaney. Like, I mean, I keep just have that in my head.
Well, it's all the Leo Varadkar references.
Well, it was Ronan Carolan had his arms out, and then a very underrated block was Peter Riley came across from that incident, and it was the Derry number 17. Was that Diamond or was it Dial? Went for another score, and Peter Riley just got his fingertips to that to save that, because that would have been a point.
I think that was Doyle. Actually, that is one thing that you can really notice, can't you? Like even from the forwards, there's a lot of diving blocking going on, like, and a lot of pressure being put on the ball. And, you know, that's probably the biggest difference you can see in the space of two decades, is that these people are dropping off now, and maybe the one-on-one defending. Like, you know, look at Kieran McKeever's tackling. Like, you know, I know it's an obvious one to pick out, but, like, he steps in, you know, as soon as he knows somebody's going to take a solo or a bounce. Like, you know, when all the people are dropping off, he steps up and takes the ball off you, and you just don't see that anymore.
Yeah, one thing I noticed as well in this game, it was back in 1997 when referees were being tricked by the old holding the arm and going down and getting the free that way. Did you see a few of them giving out to Pat McEnany, who was a good ref? But it took referees a long time to actually figure out what was going on there, and then actually started overdoing it, over-guessing it, that sometimes you would be getting fouled and they wouldn't give it to you.
Yeah, but it's an interesting thing. You can even see the evolution of refereeing, like, because there's a few things where you think, ah, Jesus, like, Pat should be on top of that, but maybe, like, it's of the era, you know, and, like, you know, late tackles coming in as well, whereas he's letting the game flow the way it probably would be done. There's a lot of stuff. But actually, do you know what? Here's a good point, though. Like, the time it took for frees was really annoying. Like, it was taking 40, 50 seconds every time, and that was just seemingly normal at that stage.
Yeah, Toehill, very unique free-taking technique. He almost bounced like a rabbit twice, or like a you know, just, he did two kind of, you know, what other way could you describe them other than bounces? And then it was just two steps left before, yeah, two steps more to go after the two bounces. He barely walked up to it.
Two big giant steps left, in fairness, but yeah, it's almost like his body's bouncing through his frame or something like that. Like, you know, where he's not bouncing up and down, but his structure is going up and down, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a definitely weird one. So Derry did have a goal chance, which would have won them the game. It was a great run by Kieran McKeever, and McGill ended up having a shot, and Paula Dowd made a very good save. But, like, I mean, over the course of and balance of the game, you would say Cavan were the better team.
Oh, I think they were. Like, I think Derry, obviously Cavan, I was thinking you'd be tearing your hair out. Ronan Carolan went through for a goal chance as well, and he fisted it over. Kieran McKeever fisted one over, but when it's Kieran McKeever and he's got his back to goal, I think that's fair enough.
That's fair enough, yeah.
Go on.
I don't think Marty was too happy about that. Thought there was a goal on there. Was that the Kieran McKeever one?
No, I think that was the Carolan one he was giving out about.
Oh, that was Carolan, is right. Yeah. He didn't like that Carolan went fisted it over, yeah.
Maybe that's why he thought he had a stinker. But I think Joe Cassidy could have worked a goal. He was 2-on-1 and he just had to shift the ball right and it would have come back. And instead, he tried to fist it over and he hit the post or something like that. And there was another time as well where Cassidy was in, I thought, and Heaney just didn't pass the ball over the top to him and he went out left and McGill put it over. But that's me with my Derry glasses on. But, like, Cavan, I think they definitely merited it. I think they got it right on the sideline. Like, the management-wise, they had it spot on, whereas I think Mullins made a few mistakes, as we've talked about. And then I just think, like, Cavan's big players had big games against Derry's big ones, and when you have you sending Henry Downey was lucky to stay on, like, that's massive. Like, you know, it shows that Cavan really hammered that hammer. I think Toehill was limited in a way that I hadn't seen in a long time, and I thought even Kieran McKeever, so the point about Kieran McKeever and Larry Riley is that, like, this is McKeever. Like, I've never seen him on the back foot, and, you know, I think he did get the grips of him in a way that McBride obviously didn't, but straight away Riley scored a point off him and then won a free that should have been clipped over as well. And it was just surprising to see such a shoot cornerback who you never see under pressure struggling like that.
Yeah, Joe Brawley said before the game, he said, at the present time, I think Cavan are better than Tyrone. They're very fit and are not choking the same way they did 2 or 3 years ago in big matches. So, like, I mean, that's typical Joe Brawley being very honest before the game. But there was no choking here. Like, I mean, they went into an Ulster final as massive underdogs against a team that were All-Ireland favourites and, you know, won the game, were the better team, and in the end, you know, saw the game out, you know, in a fairly professional manner.
Yeah, and like, you know, and defence, like, they all stood up to the plate as well. Like, they mostly, I don't think Derry's full forward line were helped, but the defenders were on top as well, you know, like, throughout. So even when they were under that bit of pressure and when they might have retreated after the goal, which was longer than what we thought towards the end, they all were able to man up. And like, you have Carolyn back doing a diving block, you have Peter Riley chipping in. Like, I think Cavan, all the players for 70 minutes were more dominant, and then when they really wanted it, they went and took it.
Yeah, Peter Riley, interestingly enough, was centre half back under 21 team that got to the All Ireland final against Kerry. So he was playing wing forward. So there was a bit of work rate, you know what I mean, kind of in them anyways. They took off Fintan Cahill, obviously, and Stephen King, who were their two big kind of more experienced players, and they had more of a squad, like Stephen King was saying. You know, when you have a decent team and then all these under-21s come in, you've got loads of options. But like, they won that game then, Cavan, and they went to play Kerry in the semi-final. Like I was talking to Stephen about, most of the Cavan players have huge regrets about that game, you know, because Larry Riley hit the underside of the crossbar with 6 minutes to go. I didn't realise there was only 6 minutes to go in that. And that would have put Cavan a point up. They were two down at that stage. And from that rebound off the post, Kerry went down and scored a goal at the other end to put five in it. Game over. 6 minutes left. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot more in that game. And Ronan Carolan said afterwards, he said, what we learned afterwards was that particular Kerry team was hugely vulnerable. They had an enormous amount of pressure on them. And we realised too late that they were there for the taking. And I suppose, like, I mean, a famine in Kerry is from whenever they had won it. When was the last time they won it? 86, maybe, was it? Up until 97.
Yeah.
That was Kerry's famine. So there was massive pressure on that Kerry team.
Yeah, sure. No more than I'm saying that was a big opportunity missed on Derry's part. Like, Cavan deserved to beat Derry, and then they were there in that position with Kerry. And yeah, like, they had that big chance as well. Like, and that was probably a big opportunity for anybody to go win an Ulster or go win an All-Ireland Championship. And when you see Tyrone going down to the All-Ireland final, we saw all the Ulster teams earlier in that decade. I think the teams from the south of the border had gotten weaker. Yeah, like that must, even though that's a momentous year for Cavan and it hasn't been as good since, like, that must sting. That there probably was a boat missed there.
Yeah, potential boat. Right, we'll come back with performance of the weekend. Dear, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just patching the side either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
Okay, Conan, performance of the weekend. We'll start off with Dermot McCabe. I was interested that he was so young in 1997, but he had been playing since 95, so it's not like it was his first year or anything. Being asked to mark Anthony Toohill, did brilliantly on Toohill, it has to be said, especially in the first half. Won the throw-in, like I said, got a huge point. Toohill caught nothing off him, so he was breaking all toes. Look, it's very difficult when a very good fetcher behind you wants to break everything, and especially when Dermot McCabe didn't have the ego to say, I'm going to fetch with Toohill at that time. Well, Toohill's not going to catch anything if he's just going to be spoiled. So Toohill couldn't dominate the game in the air. Maybe if McCabe had marked Toohill 5 years after that he might have tried to catch with him, you know, and you might have seen Toohill dominate him. But when you're trying to break, it's a good lesson for any more inexperienced midfielder. Don't have an ego about it. Break the bloody ball off the bigger net.
Yeah, especially when the ball's been floated right to the middle like it was back then. Yeah, McCabe was aggressive, wasn't he? Like, you know, even yeah, with those, like, the balls that were going up into the middle, he was attacking them. He was just a real ball of energy. That score was manic. Like, you know, just the way he stripped it from Lockhart, it was a bad pass inside, but then, like, just no pass, just went straight down and kicked it from about 50 yards and probably had about 20 to spare on it.
Fair, yeah.
It was, like, it was great, like, great performance. I've said it a couple of times, but, like, you know, to see Toho being put up to like that, it really showed what a massive game McCabe was having. And, like, yeah, and, like, from Gavin's kickouts as well, as you say, he was taking him in a tour of the place. And just a good footballer overall, wasn't he, like, when he had the ball?
No, he definitely was. I think Ronan Carolyn was outstanding the whole way through the game. And, like I said, roasted Henry Downey and didn't make a change on there until way too late when Gary Coleman went on. But he was scoring off the left and the right. And, like, I remember him from the International Rules in 1998. He was on it when I made that. Like, he very, very classy player. And, you know, when he got it, you thought something was going to happen.
Right, yeah. Like, I thought his set pieces as well, obviously, were real standard. Like, yeah. It was real, like, real victory for kicking the ball off the ground with him and Toho on the same pitch, like, just wrapping their big toes around them. And the one, like, the first one he got was right out in the sideline, like, you know, just pure class, just whipping it over from that far back. Like, but yeah, just a... Again, like, as I said, it was sobering. Like, I haven't seen boys like Downey and Toho having, like, that much pressure put on them. Like, and Downey was shifted out to the left too late. Like, you know, he should have been moved off him sooner. And actually, what I thought that they were trying to do originally with Kieran McKeever following Damien O'Reilly was maybe free up Downey just to be a classic number six. But it wasn't. It was a man-on-man battle, and Carolyn got the better of it.
Well, that was it. Carolyn was dropping very deep. Like, he was contesting kickouts at one stage. I thought he'd been moved into midfield, you know, when Stephen King was looking injured. But Henry Downey always seemed to be marking him. It was a confusing enough one, really. But Ronan Carolyn looked like he would be equally as comfortable in midfield anyways, because he's a big, big fella.
Yeah, we got a good line out of Murray from that as well. It was like, you know, it shows how bad things are going when Henry Downey's winning a ball in the middle of the pitch. And it's like, what? What are you talking about? He's won a lot of balls in the middle of the pitch. And, like, he was following Carolyn out as well. And I think that sort of threw him. That, like, again, like, this is why I think it was such a masterstroke. And maybe just Martin McHugh being a centre forward as well was able to figure out how to move Henry Downey around. Like, you know, tell Carolyn to go deep, get the ball. Downey was under pressure. And then what it meant was that Derry's fullback line was particularly under pressure. And when you're playing nice balls in with all that space, and, like, you know, it just worked for Cavan.
Exactly. Larry Riley is another one from Cavan. They were, those three were probably the big three for Cavan. You'd say Jerry Sheridan did well on Brolly, but Brolly got very little ball, you know, but you'd still nominate him for performance the weekend. Larry Riley, especially in the first half, he set the tone for Cavan early. He was all over the place. He was a live wire. He was impossible to mark. There was questionable two bounces, lads are saying to me on Twitter. It must have been a very subtle two bounces because I didn't notice it at the time. He was very good. Now, he wasn't in it as much in the second half. There's no point in saying. And I do think Kieran McKeever did well on him in the second half. And obviously gave him a shot off the ball into the back because Larry Riley wasn't happy about it. Remember, then Larry gave him one kind of walking past him.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit like Kieran McKeever kind of thinking, I'll slow this young lad down here now very quickly.
But that was it. Like, he had his tail up. He had been roasting Johnny McBride, which is obvious. McBride's not a cornerback. And then the two first balls that he got off McKeever, he was running loose at that stage, and McKeever had just been shifted over to him after having been out in the middle of the pitch. You know, so it was probably some change of pace going in there to mark your man with like his backup. And then, like, after those two balls, McKeever obviously done something to him. And, like, you listen to all the stories that Brolly would tell you about McKeever, and I'm sure it wasn't just completely 100% clean. And yeah, it did seem to soften his cough a little bit, and McKeever seemed a lot tighter then for the rest of the game.
He definitely did. I don't know about you. I thought Kieran McKeever played well. Like, I mean, Riley only took him for a point. Like, he broke up the field a good few times. He gave Joe Brolly a couple of good balls. Like, the only one who was actually, it looked to me like Kieran McKeever had a bit of faith in Joe Brolly because he was looking for him when he got it. He scored a point in the second half. I thought he was Derry's best player along with Gary Coleman.
Yeah, like, maybe I thought, like, Gary Coleman, I don't know, I just sort of expect a bit more from him as well. Like, you're probably right about Kieran McKeever. Like, I think he definitely had a good game going forward as well. He obviously got a point, set up a lot. Yeah, in fairness, like, he was probably their best attacking threat, like, in terms of setting up things. But yeah, I was just had that memory of the first two balls from Larry Riley and just thinking that he was struggling as well. But, like, after that dunt or whatever happened, and Laurie Riley went out of the game, and then it was when Jason Riley came on that Kevin got back on top. So yeah, no, maybe it was a bit harsh on him earlier. I actually thought David O'Neill was very good as well. You mentioned Fintan Cahill being one of Kevin's best players. Like, I thought O'Neill like did expertly on him,
especially considering he took that awful boot, a completely accidental boot to the nose.
Yeah, and like a real, like a, just a real classy fullback. Like, you know, we're always crying out for him. They keep coming back, you know, in the Derry jersey, and he won an Ulster club with Blahelic, and they'd all tell you that, you know, that he just did all the man marking jobs for them. Like, he took out some of the biggest names in Ulster club football.
Right. You have Sean Marty Lockhart and you have him, and then you end up with Johnny McBride man marking Larry.
And Kieran McKeever. Like, you had three of Derry's best fullbacks.
Holy shit. Three of the best.
That was bizarre.
Three of the best man markers in the country, and you put Johnny McBride, who's not a man marker, who's a kind of Johnny McBride's a weird one in that Johnny McBride was able to do a job in too many different positions, and he didn't know whether he was coming or going, really, if you're being honest. And I felt probably with my career a little bit, when you're too versatile, you can't nail down somewhere. You can't just become good in somewhere, you know, at one position, because if you're needed somewhere else, you'll just be moved in there. And Johnny McBride, like, I saw Huey Emerson score three goals off that poor chap in a league match in Croke Park I think it was the same year in 1997. And like, he's played centre back, he played midfield, he played wing forward, he's played everywhere up through the lines.
Yeah, like, that's it. Like, he's one of those boys there was always a debate about in Derry, like, you know, where he should play, because everybody knew, like, you want to see him play club football. Like, he's a lord. Like, he plays midfield for Loop, and or he did, and, you know, just he was just a class footballer. Like, you know, and he isn't the tallest, but he managed to hold his own.
Yeah, not tall enough probably for inter-county midfield. That was probably
definitely shouldn't have been midfield. He played centre forward now in the Derry team in 2004. He got to the All-Ireland semi-final. And he was really good that year, but like, it's just, there's always a school of thought that he should have been moved back to halfback at some stage in his career. But after those younger days, he seemed to always just be around the half forward line. But yeah, as you said, there was just debates, and he was moved around too often, probably. And just he's remembered very fondly in Derry, like, you know, because he's such a class player. But I just don't know if we saw, like, if you watch him at club level, like, you'd think that he should be Derry's best player every week.
Right.
I don't know if he was that.
I've always followed his career, really, because I remember in the 95 All-Ireland minor final, Westmeath were after beating us in the Leinster final after three matches, and Shane Deering rugby tackled him at the very last attack. Do you remember that? Wasn't that Johnny McBride, the Shane Deering rugby tackled?
That was McBride. I remember that as my favourite ever moment as a Derry fan, winning a quarter final match. So sad.
Oh, was that? No, this was in the minors in the All Ireland final in 1995.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right about that. Sorry, I thought you meant because you lost to Westmeath in the Leinster final.
In 2004.
Yeah. And that went to replay as well, didn't it?
That went to a replay too, and they ended up playing Derry afterwards, so there's a few similarities there. I think for performance of the weekend, it has to go to Ronan Carolan. Like, it was a close call between himself and Dermot McCabe, considering who Dermot McCabe was marking. But, like, I mean, let's be honest, Ronan Carolan was marking Henry Downey and was brilliant. Left or right, his left-footed point in the start of the second half was a beautiful score to freeze, and then kicked a lovely one off the right, which dropped right on the net. There's nothing more inspirational than the ones that hang in the air and then just land just over the crossbar. I thought he was the standout player from start to finish, and that's not even mentioning the block on Anthony Cole at the end, you know, a full length block on what would have been, you know, almost a guaranteed score. I think he's fully deserving performance of the weekend.
Yeah, and like, you know, that sort of had a bit of cuteness as well. Like, you know, Toole was hanging on to that ball. I thought, you know, I would have thought too long for anybody else, like, you know, but Toole wanted to score because he's the best option to score. And Carolan knew he was going to come on to his right and just shifted across when Toole was going left. And Carolan had sort of anticipated it and got that amazing block on him. Yeah, like, I think he deserves it. Like, he was definitely the standout of a lot of standouts. And for him to come back from such a bad first half, you know, especially, it's really, really good for him.
The Marty Morrissey analyzed bad first half. Right, okay, Colin, that's it. We'll leave it there. We'll be back on Thursday. I'm not sure what we'll do yet, but sure, we'll be doing something anyways, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken to each other, and They regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both more keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.